Welcome back. It is time for my favorite hour of the week. It is time for My Side of the Universe on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Todd Wilcox, and today I am so excited. We're going to do something that I never thought would be possible. We're actually going to be talking to somebody on Rapa Nui. We know it as Easter Island. Here's something crazy. Easter Island is the same time zone as we are. Same time zone as Utah. How strange is that? So I'm going to be talking to Marcus Edensky. He's the CEO of Easter Island Travel. You can find that at easterisland.travel and see the things he does. He's rated number one by TripAdvisor and really does a great job. I can't wait. We're going to be talking to somebody on the place in the earth that I want to visit the most, Easter Island. We'll be right back with Marcus Edensky on My Side of the Universe on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Welcome back to My Side of the Universe. This is Todd Wilcox. We're on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I am so excited today. We're going to be talking to somebody that lives on the place that I want to go to most in this world. You've heard me many, many times with almost every guest that we've had on that's a world traveler. I talk about Easter Island, or as they say on that island, Rapa Nui. And we're going to do our best to behave ourselves and call it Rapa Nui today instead of Easter Island, because its name is Rapa Nui. I'm joined today by Marcus Edensky. He is the CEO of Easter Island Travel. You can find him at easterisland.travel. And I would encourage you to look that up right now if you're not driving. If you're home listening, look that up and see the things that he has available. He's rated number one on TripAdvisor for Rapa Nui travel. Marcus, welcome to My Side of the Universe.
Hey, Todd. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, this is so exciting. It's amazing that you and I can talk this far away. And what's even weirder to me, even though the technology is allowing us to talk, you know, virtually from around the world, we're in the same time zone.
Are we actually? Is that for real?
That's for real.
9 o'clock. Wow.
Yes. Rapa Nui is the same exact time. So that is a very, very cool thing. It blew me away when I checked it online. And so I knew it would be easier to talk to somebody.
Geographically, it actually shouldn't make sense, because we are actually 2 hours closer to Chile, just closer than what we should be, just to make banking easier.
Oh, okay.
Things like that. So there should be 4 hours difference between this island and the continental Chile, but there are only 2 hours difference. So that's probably why some people sometimes do get surprised, you know, that we're in the same time zone as some areas in the States.
That makes sense. Okay, I can see that adjustment and why they would do it. So Easter Island has been a fascination of mine. I was probably 3 or 4 years old, saw the pictures of the Moai, and was just... entranced. What can you tell us, Marcus, about the Moai? What do the Moai mean to you? How did they come about? Just tell us whatever's on your mind about the Moai.
Well, this is, as you say, it's a truly magical place, you know. Sometimes you get used to it here, you know, and they just blend into the landscape and you don't worry much about it, but you have those moments, you know, when you really get back into it, you know, snap back into it, and you realize, you know, what a wonder of the world this is, you know, that people, I'd like to call this island, this is the most advanced Stone Age society in the world, you know, as far as I know, because people in the ancient times here, they had nothing, they had no metal, no glass, no clothes, you know, they were chieftains wearing feather dresses, and were practically naked, and they built these amazing wonders, you know, these incredible 10 meters tall statues that they transported all over the island and successfully placed on these platforms that are called Ahu. And it's incredible that people made these, you know, with so few resources, using only their hands and rock, basically, and ropes made out of plants, right?
Wow, that is amazing.
That's it.
Now,
it is, you know, so, yeah, please.
There's a lot of theories about how those were moved around. The people of Rapa Nui,
yes.
How do they believe that it took place? How do the natives of Rapa Nui say that those statues were moved?
Well, there are a few theories out there, right? As you say. If you ask the less scientific person in this community, you know, the more traditional person.
Yes.
He or she may or may not say that they simply used mana. So mana is this supernatural force, you know, this magical force that the chieftains had in the ancient society. And anyone can have it, though, but especially the chieftains in the ancient society. And that they would use this magical force to have the statues levitate. And then they would be placed in their correct location. This may, though, be because that's what the oral tradition says, you know, that the chieftain was standing in front of the statues and he said, walk, and the statue walked, right? Though this may also be you may interpret this as well to a more worldly view, you know, you may interpret this mana as being political power, you know, power of the people, and that you would say walk, and the statue would walk, yes, but you would have 200 people around the statue making it walk.
Okay.
You know, so that's really a question of how you look at history, right?
Absolutely.
And, so some people also have quite a literal meaning of the word in Rapa Nui language, haere, which is what, according to oral tradition, the statues did, which means walk. You know that the statues did haere, they walked, and they say that they were using, making it walk by using ropes, you know? And the traditions, they don't mention any ropes, right? But still, you would wiggle them from side to side, making the statues walk. That's what some people believe, that that interpret the legends still quite literally, maybe not this supernatural version, but still quite literally. So yes, then they would be walking, wiggling from one side to another. And there's this quite well-known archaeologist called Terry Hunt has been talking some about this. He released a book on this a couple of years ago, and National Geographic did this video with him as well. Looks very neat when they make a statue, a replica of a statue walk in back in Hawaii. 5-ton statues, as far as I remember.
Yes.
And so that's one version, you know, a little bit less magical and still quite literal interpretation of the legends. And but if you ask me, you know, if you would, whenever you come over here, Todd, and you'll see all of these statues all over the island, the terrain is not easy, you know. It's hilly terrain, rocky all over, and they place statues in every single corner. I mean, in the least expected locations of the island. They transported the statues around volcanoes, even up hills in some parts, you know, up the volcanoes. I mean, it's a hard thing to do, you know. And personally, I don't believe that you would be rocking the statues all the way over the island. It just doesn't make sense because it's way too easy for the statue to fall. You know, one side will pull, like the team on one side of the statue would pull a little bit too hard, and then that's it. You know, the statue would fall because
sure.
They still had quite a good success rate. You know, there are 400 statues that actually did reach their Ahu platform, and only around 100 fell and were abandoned, you know, on the transportation road. So personally, I'd say that they used a technique that with which you can apply brute force, you know, and that is a technique that's more stable. And personally, I believe in the transportation method with which they used rollers,
Oh.
You know, so yeah, so simply having some kind of a raft or a wagon or some kind of stable ground that the statue would be standing on, and you fasten the statue with ropes, logs, maybe both, maybe only one of them, and somehow have it stable, and then have this raft or this wagon rolling on other logs. And this is nothing, you wouldn't be anything unique to this island. This is a very energy efficient method that has been used all over the world. Like in the from my where I'm from Sweden, you know, in our ancient culture of the Vikings, that's how they transported the Viking ships between the rivers, and probably how they transported the blocks as well in the Egyptian pyramids. They were building those, you know. So that's actually the method that I believe most in.
Okay, so what brings you from Sweden to Rapa Nui?
I came here, when was this? In 2007 for the first time. And I had been traveling through Chile as a tourist, no, but on an extended vacation for half a year for 7 months. And I was hitchhiking through the country, through the continent, part of the country, and to get to know the whole country, you know. And at the end of that trip, I came over here. Because it was really, I had been hitchhiking from the north to the south, you know, during those 6 months, and this was really that last piece of the country that I had not gotten to know yet. So I bought a ticket, came over here, and found the place really interesting, of course, you know, as anyone would. And I was only here for a week and a half, and 3 years later, I came back to focus on this island and to get to know only this place, and I stayed here for a full year, and then I met my wife, and I stayed because of her. We fell in love, and we found each other, and yeah, that's the reason I'm here still today. And today I've fallen in love with the island as well, and the culture and everything in it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So today we're here. So now we're here. We have 2 kids, and yeah, we're good. We're happy.
That's fantastic. That is a great story.
Yeah,
And
thanks.
we did, going back to what we were talking about a minute ago, we actually had Terry Hunt on here on the show talking about that. And I can see how it makes sense in a good flat, sturdy area to be rocking them. And after I talked with Terry, I was telling my wife about it, and she says, "Well, I've seen you do that with refrigerators. I've seen you do that with couches, doing that exact pivoting that he was describing." And so she says, "Yeah, I can completely see how that would happen. Plus, with the geometry he did, it kind of made sense." With me, and we've got a few minutes left in this segment, I want to throw something out. I'm kind of picturing this mana, and I'm glad you brought that up because I didn't know about that before, the supernatural force. Could that be from an ancient time when, instead of being stone-aged, we were actually more advanced, much more advanced than we are now, and they were using some kind of levitation, harmonics, anti-gravity, something like that to move it, and that's what has been translated as mana, since that time, since whatever happened that we lost our that civilization. Do you think there's anything to that?
Many people believe that, you know, and many people that come over here, that's often the kind of person that believe in those things. Personally, I don't. You know, I
Okay.
have a more, I don't know, practical view of history of the world. You know, something that can be explained with what we have today. But sure, you know, I mean, life is dynamic, right? You know, people have different beliefs in this world. You know, and there are people that believe that, and who am I to say really that that's wrong? You know.
Right, yeah, and that's what this show's about, is just getting those different ideas out there. I was just curious what you thought about it. Obviously, we don't know for sure, but we do know that it's fascinating.
Yeah, because if we look at, I mean, we still don't know. We're still talking about, you had Terry Hunt on, and he's talking about his theory. Other scientists have other theories. That means that we actually don't know.
Correct.
We
Yeah.
still don't know how they were moved, because even today, I mean, it's hard. Even today, when we have cranes, it's hard.
Exactly. Yeah, just trying to move those with the best equipment we have right now would be so hard. Getting it up the hills, getting it
That would
around
be
things.
hard.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly. And I don't know what the most efficient way mean. I don't know how much these gigantic helicopters can lift. Maybe a four or five of those. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because the biggest statue that was transported has an estimated weight of 86 tons.
Wow.
86 tons.
Oh,
My car is an SUV. It weighs 1.6 tons.
and good luck
And
pushing that with tires, huh?
I know, man. That's what's so incredible. So definitely, I can understand that people believe in aliens, and magic and all of that to explain these phenomena. Or I mean, these achievements.
Sure. But
I
just
mean, this is really,
yeah.
yeah.
One of the things I'd like to say just before we go on break here is people always amaze me. You get a group of people together with a common goal and then magic will happen. They will find a way to get something done. And it may not be the way we think it's going to be when we start, but they will find a way to do it. And maybe that's what happened here. They just found a way. Whatever that way was, they found it and moved it. I never cease to amaze the things that people can do when they put their mind to it and have a common goal.
Exactly. This is definitely a place where that happened, especially in the ancient times, because the first non-Rapa Nui person that lived with the Rapa Nui people, he is called Eugene A. Raw. He was here in 1864 for the first time. And suddenly people said, because there was no wood left at the island anymore, so they forgot how to make boats. So they told this guy, as he had arrived on a ship, he told him, "You make a boat." And he said, "Well, I don't know how to make a boat. You make a boat, go make a boat, and we'll help you, but you must make a boat for us, so we can go out fishing again." And this guy says, this missionary writes in his journal, that he had no clue of how to make a boat. He had no experience whatsoever, but he still, I mean, he had to make a boat. And there was the sense of everyone helping, the whole community. They all lended their two hands to this project, and there was no one that would not help. He writes in his journal, "No one dared not to help." And that says a lot about how this community, this culture in the ancient times, managed to achieve these incredible things. And it also tells us a lot about how to achieve big things. It's just like you say, Todd, it's like by helping each other out.
Absolutely.
Only then can we achieve magnificence like this.
Without question. Marcus, we need to break away for just a minute and do some of our fun commercials, but we'll be back on My Side of the Universe talking with Marcus Adensky. He is the president and CEO of Easter Island Travel. You can find his stuff at easterisland.travel, and I would encourage you to look at that while we're talking today. But we'll be right back with more My Side of the Universe in just a moment. And we're back on My Side of the Universe on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I am with Marcus Edensky. I was saying his name incorrectly. I usually like to talk to the people and get that right, and I forgot to ask him the correct pronunciation. So it's Edensky. We're doing this right, and he is the CEO of Easter Island Travel, and you can find him at easterisland.travel, and I would encourage you to do that. So Marcus, some of the things, with traveling and that, I love to talk to people about the things that they eat. So the people that come in and travel, is there a difference between what the travelers want to eat as compared to what the local people from Rapa Nui eat?
Well, yeah, food here traditionally is quite simple. You know, this is an extremely isolated island, one of the most isolated islands, places on this planet. And there has been no history of spices, things like that. You know, the only spice here is salt water from the ocean. And you would basically, everything would be fresh, though. So you'd basically catch a fish and you throw it over the fire. Uh-huh. And so that's extreme. Food here is very, very fresh. And so that means as well that basically when you make a soup here, you simply use ingredients, you know, fish and plantains, you know, this short banana.
Okay.
And potatoes, you know, and pieces of chicken, maybe things like that.
Very nice. Now, please, please, please tell me that there is not a McDonald's there.
No, there's none. None.
Good.
There's no no food chain here at all. I mean, it's not only local kitchens, you know, and local shops. There are no brands here.
Okay.
We're not talking about businesses, really.
Okay. And as far as clothing, if somebody's traveling and they head out there, is there a place that they can go if they need a jacket or shoes or whatever to get that, or do you really need to do it in Chile? So there is those available there?
Yeah, there are like little shops, you know, like where in which the owners often tend to the customers themselves. So yeah, they bring over stuff. They fly over stuff from Santiago, from Chile, from the continent.
Okay.
And they sell it here. So yeah.
And I've read that it's very inexpensive as far as eating and those kind of things as you're on Rapa Nui. So as far as budgets go, you can do it for fairly inexpensive.
I'm sorry, it was breaking up right over there. What were you saying? The last price?
Yeah, as far as the price of food and things like that, it's very inexpensive on Rapa Nui. So the budget, what do you think somebody should bring money wise?
Yeah, well, inexpensive. Yeah, depends on what one compares with, really. Because if you compare it to the continent, it's much more expensive. But if you compare it to Bora Bora, you know, or Tahiti, then it's not as expensive as over there, you know. So let's say one plate of food nowadays in the restaurants would be 15,000 pesos, which is approximately, you know, $25, right?
Okay.
Something like that. And that's for one plate, you know, without having anything to drink with it. So I don't know if that's, yeah, that's kind of the price, you know. You can get an empanada for the third of that, and you'll be fine for a few hours, you know.
So, gotcha. Okay.
But, yeah, that's kind of what you're looking at, you know. So bringing, maybe calculating some $100 per day for your own expenses, then you'll be fine, you know, probably with food and souvenirs that you'd want to get as well.
Okay, so it's very similar to traveling in the United States. That's about what most people would figure. It's about $100 a day.
Yeah, I see. Is that what? Okay, cool. Yeah, it's about that.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, very good. And as far as souvenirs, what kind of things can you get there? Can you get like miniature moai that are made from the rock of Easter Island of Rapa Nui? What kind of souvenirs do you have available?
Exactly. Yeah, that would be the most classical souvenir. You know, get a statue either made out of wood or, yes, as you say, made out of rock. You may find smaller statues made out of the rock from the island, but usually not very big ones because, well, you know, the rock here at the island, it's a limited resource. Right?
Absolutely.
So for the big statues, they often use a new kind of material. It's not natural. It's artificial material. It's white. It's made out of this white kind of building block, you know. It's some kind of concrete mix with air bubbles in it, and it's actually lighter and stronger than the natural rock. So, but it's not natural, you know. So, but it's good for people that want something that's still not that expensive, because and it's easy to take back home, you know.
There you go. Yeah.
So, and other than that, you have the wood kinds, and then it depends a lot on the quality of the wood. If you get a statue made out of eucalyptus, for example, then that's inexpensive. Or avocado, you know, that's inexpensive. But if you get one made out of the native tree makoi, which is a slow-growing tree, very hard and very beautiful, has yellow and brown colors in it, that's the highest quality wood, then it's going to be three times more easily for the exact same statue.
Okay. And recently I saw a documentary on TV, and they briefly talked about Dr. Hunt's work with, you know, tilting the statues and moving them that way, and a few other things.
Right.
It was called Easter Island Unearthed, and they were showing different things on it. One of the questions I had from that is they showed some carvings, some wood carvings that were local to the area, that showed very skinny. It was a very skinny human shape, but it had the big elongated head like you would see with what people describe aliens.
Yes.
And also the heads that you find around the world, the elongated skulls. Do you know what the story is with that? What was going on? Why they were carving those?
Oh, yeah, I do. This is the so-called Moai Kavakava. Moai is a statue as we know it, and Kavakava means ribs. And that's the name of this kind of statuette. And, well, this in ancient times, you know, there's this legend about it. It's this very well-known ancient king called Tu'uku Iho. And he was strolling around somewhere around Punapau, which is an area in the center of the island. And then he saw two skeletons, and they were laying on the ground. And he saw them, and then the skeletons, they took notice of his presence, and then they regained meat on their bones, and they regained eyes and skin and everything. And then they walked up to this king, and they asked him, did you see us? You know, basically like, did you see us naked, you know? And he said, no, I didn't see anything. And then he goes away, you know, because this it's a kind of scary situation, you know, so even for a king. So then he walks away, you know, and then they reappear, but in more numbers, you know, and did he see us? Did he see anything? Did he see us? He said, no, he walks away, you know, and then they come in the hundreds, and then they come in the thousands, and these spirits, right? So, and then he goes back home, and he always saying that he didn't see anything. So then he carves a statuette to the liking of this, what he had just seen, you know, and calls this statuette Moai Kavakava. And this becomes like a, like a magical item, you know, that will, that he hangs by the entrances of his home to scare away this, the bad spirits so that they may not enter the home.
Okay.
And this is something that was used, traditionally, in this culture, not today, but in the ancient times, you know, when this culture was still like authentic, if we could say that, you know, without influences from the outside.
Sure.
And that's the story behind the Moai Kavakava. And yeah, and this is also quite a common souvenir as well.
Oh, okay. And and that kind of leads me to other things, the local lore. So they're talking about the spirits there. Is there much of a history of ghosts and activities like that on the island?
Oh yeah, man. I mean, this place is all about that. You know, the statues, we talked a little bit about how they were built, right? How transported, but the reason that they were built was because of this, you know, because of the spirits. I mentioned that this magical force called mana, and the chieftains had a lot of this mana. And so this mana, it was a great resource for the tribe because it would allow them to call out the sun and call down the rain and cast blessings and curses on people, you know, give you good fishing luck. And in the end, it would make sure that you would have abundance within the tribe. You know, you would have abundant harvests. You would catch a lot of tuna when you go out fishing. So when a chieftain died, they, in the ancient times, did not want to lose this resource, which is why on top of his grave, they placed a moai statue. And through this moai, this spirit of the chieftain remains alive. So they're creating a communication link between the living and the dead, and they're basically making gods out of men. So that's the reason the statues were built, you know, so that the spirits may be still among them. And so this belief, this conviction of the spirits, it's something very, I mean, it's natural, you know, it's a natural part of the worldview, the presence and existence of spirits.
Okay.
And yeah, so it's because of this that they built the statues to start with, right? So yeah, and you can ask anyone here. You can ask anyone about the spirits, and they will be able to sit there for hours telling you stories, you know, if you'd like that.
Yeah, oh, without question, that would be a blast. I, you know, those are the kind of things that make a trip interesting, is talking to the people that live there and getting right down to the details of their background, their history, their oral traditions. So yeah, that would be fantastic. And but not every moai is every moai is a chief's is there for a chief, right? There's moais that were made for other reasons, or was there that many chiefs?
Yeah, exactly. That's the idea, you know, at least the noble people, you know, the chieftains or the nobles, you know, but every little village had a chief of that village, you know. So, yeah, that's the idea, you know. If they weren't chieftains, you know, chiefs of the village or of the tribe, maybe they were still important people.
Okay.
Because not anyone would get a statue on top of his grave. This is a culture, you know, that lasted for several hundred years. These traditions of making statues on a big scale, well, it depends on who you ask, but you know, approximately some 350 years, which is not very common for a culture, you know, to actually have the same traditions. But here it was the case. You know, the Inca Empire lasted 100 years. The ancient civilization here lasted almost 1,000 years, you know.
Okay. Very good.
So yeah, and like, yeah,
that is absolutely.
So those traditions lasted for 300-400 years, making statues like this.
Wow, and a lot of them have been tipped over, and it sounds like on purpose. Do you know why?
I couldn't say. I'd be lying if I'd say I knew. But once again, there are theories. You know, there are, I'd say, two main theories. Well, there's there is another legend as well. We can start with that, you know, the more traditional one. That would be the third one.
Perfect.
My mother-in-law, she told me one day, "Hey, son, do you know really why the statues fell?" She said, "No, Mom, I don't," I told her. "So please tell me, enlighten me." You know, and she said, "Well, these scientists and archaeologists, they all think they know," she said. "But let me tell you the true story." So there's this, in the ancient times, there was this woman called Nuahine Piquera Uri, which means the black crab woman. And this is her name. She has a lot of mana. She's a very powerful woman. And she has four adopted sons. And these four adopted sons, they are statue carvers. So one day, these four adoptive sons, they are down by the ocean and they are picking lobsters, and they eat these lobsters. And when when they have eaten the lobster, they're laying on the rocks and they're all on the in the sun, feeling their stomachs. They're so happy, their stomachs are so full, and they eat everything of these lobsters, because they were starving before, but now they're happy. And then their mother, Nuahine Pikeraouri, comes down to the coast, and she sees her four adoptive sons, and she gets furious with them. She gets so angry, she screams to them, "He mororo te hava," which means that they're bad, bad adoptive sons of excrement. And she throws a curse all over the island to make the statues fall. And that's supposedly how the statues, that's the true story of how the statues fell, my mother-in-law tells me.
Okay.
And this is a quite traditional, quite a common legend that people know of. But personally, I like to interpret things and put them in place in this world, and analyze the legends. And I'm very open. I am a big believer in the legends. I believe that most of them are based on true events. If they're not entirely true, they're at least most of them based on truth. And possibly there was an earthquake, and a couple of the statues fell, and then someone in the village would say that, "Hey, yesterday this woman that they say she's a witch, she got really angry at her statue carving son, so probably it was her, to explain this phenomenon of the earthquake." And then we have this legend, how people piece it together and trying to explain the world phenomena. And that's an interpretation of this legend,
Sure.
take it literally myself. So that's one, that's the more traditional way. And then the modern theories is that, well, most people off the island, we can start with that one,
Sure.
they talk about war, because you read, for example, Collapse by Jared Diamond. It's a very famous book. He's a famous writer. And you watch the movies, the Hollywood movie Rapa Nui, and death and destruction always sells.
Sure.
So that's why this theory of this very aggressive version of history is very popular. That's what people hear about off island. So this theory is about how when people built the statues, they built many, and the statues were bigger every time. And then they, in the end, cut down all the trees of the island, deforested the whole island, because when people arrived 1,000 years ago, this was a jungle. And 700, 800 years later, they had cut down all of the trees of the island. And so this caused wind, which caused drought, which caused smaller harvests, which caused starvation, right? And then war because of that, because people were fighting over what was left. So then they, in this war, like tiny world war, local world war of the island in between all of the tribes, they would destroy what was most valuable to the enemy tribe, which was the statue. This would demoralize the tribe and simply show that the defeating tribe was better than the losing tribe, right? So that's one theory as to why the statues fell. And personally, I don't believe this theory very much. I don't think that there was such a violent past here on this island. Yes, there were battles because there are stories about them, and it wouldn't make sense if there were none ever, because people are still people, and
Sure.
humans fight. And we have also found the skull, there is one skull that has been found that has a war damage, you know, in the skull, you know, like a piece of obsidian.
Okay.
And it supposedly killed this person. So, yeah. And there's no other way of obsidian reaching a skull other than war, right? That I can think of, anyway. So, anyway, we have that. So, personally, though, you know, once again, there are many things that point towards that there was not a violent past. You know, if you read the ship logs, the first European expedition that we know of came here in 1722. And this was a Dutch expedition. And the Dutch, they write in their ship logs that they are surprised to see that this people, they have no weapons. That's what they say.
Wow.
You know, and they say that they see no test of their courage, but they seem like a feeble-hearted people. That's what they write, you know. And the second expedition, 48 years later in the year 1770, that was the Spanish expedition, and they also say the same thing, that they're surprised to see that they have no weapons. So, to me, that does not sound like a bloodthirsty people, you know, and if you go further ahead in time to the year, once again to the year 1864, when this missionary comes to the island, Eugene A. Raw, the first person to ever live with the Rapa Nui people that is not from Polynesia himself, he also writes that people here have a phobia for blood,
oh.
Which once again doesn't sound like a bloodthirsty people. There are a few examples of it in his book. In his letter that he writes that when one day this missionary wants to slaughter a chicken, kill a chicken to eat it, and then he cuts off the throat of the chicken, and the woman that's standing beside him, she faints when she sees this.
Oh,
so
okay.
Yeah, quite surprising. And he says that whenever they want to kill an animal, they bury the head in the ground to asphyxiate it. And yeah, just so that there will be no blood in the scene. And also that one day when he has a fight, you know, this missionary is fighting with someone in his home, you know, or like I don't know, some guy tries to take something from him, like an axe or something. And then accidentally this axe touches the arm of the missionary. So there is some blood, you know, he starts bleeding a little bit on his arm, and then the other person that wanted to take the axe, he gets scared, you know, and he flees instantly. So,
okay.
Once again, you know, if you would have a culture that from being a civilized people all of a sudden can just turn into a war of total annihilation, you know, that would destroy everything, to me it doesn't make sense. You know, nothing
right.
suggests that.
It
so
sounds
personally,
like. Personally. Oh, I was just gonna say it sounds like the the way many of the European nations would fight each other and tear down the other person's stuff, and that they just kind of projected that onto their theory without the facts of
yeah.
how these people act. That, you know, well, this is how we would have done it, so they would have done it too.
Yeah, probably, right? Yeah, exactly, you know? Exactly, like you say, you know, the only thing that we don't, in Europe, no one ever made statues like this, you know?
Right.
So they're quite different, you know? And also, from living in an island still today, you know, you realize that you live closely and you will want to try to get along, you know? And I think in the ancient times, it was the same thing. So, what I believe, you know, and also looking at what they were able to do, you know, to be able to raise these many statues, it requires great teamwork, and that the system, that the society is functioning well. So then you, I don't think that from going from a high civilization, so well organized, all of a sudden everyone would start killing each other and destroying each other's statues.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't believe that. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so the third theory would be that basically when Europeans come, 1722, so back that year, It's true, there were no trees on the island, and many will say that that was because of that the making the statues had a big part in that, you know, in the deforestation. So anyway, the fact is there was no trees, no forests left on the island, and they see this this one day, you know, in April 1722, they see this huge Dutch ship out in the ocean. They have never seen anything like this. So this ship, it's on the ship they have a people that come off it, and they have these inventions, you know, these new things that they have never come in contact with. They have metal, for example, and they have glass, they have clothes, things that they've never seen. So with these things, and you know, with glass and metal, they have created inventions. For example, spy glasses, right? That makes everything come close. And this other long magical stick that sounds and the other person dies in the other end, you know, just like that.
Sure.
So, and they see this in action as well, because the first thing the Dutch do, they kill 12 people because they come too close, because they're curious about these rifles, you know.
Oh.
And yeah, so these people, you know, that come in this ship, they're like gods, you know, or they're like, it's basically like a UFO would appear one day, and they would beam down green little guys that would blink at us, and we explode. You know, it's basically the same step in technology.
Right.
So this would shake their beliefs, you know, and they had for hundreds and hundreds of years been living for the statues. They have been having this efficient society that focused, that centered all around obtaining statues, because that's the answer, the key to life, you know. The way of the secret of having abundance in your life, build statues. So, but still, they look at what the Rapa Nui people look at what they have, and in comparison to the Dutch, they have nothing. They have a treeless island. They have the land they stand on. They have the ocean and nothing else. They don't have these technological advancements at all, you know. So they realize that they have been living a lie for hundreds of years, and in disappointment and in anger, they go against the statues, and they go against everything that they have, you know, their old values, the values of respecting the royal tribe at the beach, Anakena, which is the direct descendants from the first king of the island that came here 1,000 years ago, King Hotamatua, you know, and all of those traditions, they go against that, you know. So they stop respecting the king, and they say, hey, why can't we be kings, you know? So then there are like a hundred, maybe 100 years approximately, of more worrying times, you know, where you can see that they little by little topple their own statues, you know, during this period. And if you read the ship logs, you know, when the Europeans first come to the island, all of the statues are standing. And 100 years later, following these ship logs of the different visits from off the island, you can see that the last statue falls. You know, so it's during this period that these statues fall, really, just after the contact with the Europeans, you know.
Okay.
So, yeah, so that would be, in my opinion, a more realistic way of seeing things, you know. Especially since, you know, when we have the European visitors first say that they have no weapons and that there is not a single tree on the island, they say in the ship logs, you know, how can they build these statues, they say, without having a single tree? So that tells us there are no forests, but the statues are still standing because there's not a single report on a fallen statue. You know, so that there would have been this war on the island because of the deforestation, it's highly improbable, improbable, you know, since if that would happen, it would happen as an instant consequence of the deforestation. But apparently the deforestation was long gone, you know, when the Europeans came here, and there was still no war. They still had no weapons, you know, and the statues were still standing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's according to me, you know, the influences from the outside, losing faith in their own traditions, and then toppling their own statues in disappointment and in anger. If you ask me, that's what
yeah.
down here.
That makes a lot of sense. We do need to break away for some more commercials. We'll be back with more Marcus Edensky talking about the island of Rapa Nui on My Side of the Universe. And my favorite hour of the week is almost over. The fastest hour of my week is almost over. We're just about done on My Side of the Universe for this week. Thank you for joining us each week. I had so much fun. I was borderline giddy being able to talk to somebody on Easter Island. And he didn't disappoint. Marcus Edensky was fantastic. And I love the way animals somehow find their way onto this show. Whether it's a dog barking, a cat making funny noises, or a chicken making his presence known. I just love the way animals are welcome on My Side of the Universe. So thank you, Marcus. We'll be joined by Marcus again next week. There's more. We're not done with Marcus. And we'll talk to him some more next week on My Side of the Universe. And I want you all to remember, you matter. Until you multiply yourself by the speed of light squared, then you energy. We'll see you next week on My Side of the Universe on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.